Welcome back to the Global Novel, where we whisk you away on a literary journey around the world, one page turning adventure at a time. I'm your host, Claire Hennessy, and today we're unfurling the scrolls of one of the most provocative, scandalous, and riveting novels to ever emerge from China's Ming Dynasty, Jinping Mei, or as it's tantalizingly translated, The Plum in the Golden Vase. This novel is not just a story, it's a journey into the opulent and often morally ambiguous world of 16th century China. We have the esteemed Dr. Jun Jieluo, Associate Professor in East Asian Studies at Gettysburg College, joining us in the studio. Dr. Luo, with his vast knowledge of Chinese literature and culture, will help us unravel the complex narrative threads and uncover the hidden pearls within this golden vase of a novel. Welcome to the show, Junjie.
And thank you for having me here.
As we know, Junjie, The Plum in the Golden Vase has been likened to Madame Bovary by some critics, mostly for its pornographic content and a similar history of censorship. This time, however, rather than comparing the thematic similarities between these two novels, we will instead focus on the issues, on translation, especially how its English versions have been like. Your essay regarding this aspect have helped us understand the work so much better. Let us start with Jinping Mei's realistic depiction of the society and how it serves as a critical commentary on the corruption prevalent within Chinese society at the time. We also know that this is a spin-off from a chapter in Water Margin about the hero called Wu Song, who is known for single-handedly killing a tiger and later avenging the death of his brother by killing his sister-in-law, Pan Jinlian. And some critics believe the artistry of Jinping Mei far exceeds the so-called four great novels of the Ming dynasty regarding its character portrayals, narrative twists, and fluent prose. How do you view Jinping Mei's contribution to the evolution of prose fiction globally?
So Jinping Mei is an important work in Chinese literature, and its contribution to the global evolution of prose fiction are multifaceted. The novel was first published in the late 16th century. Mm-hmm. It offers a meticulous depiction of the life of Xi Mengqin, a wealthy merchant, and his relationships with his wife, concubines, mistresses in Qinghe County. Its impact on global prose fiction can be appreciated in several ways. The narrative foregrounds the life of ordinary people, as discussed by scholars like Sun Shuyu, Tian Xiaofei. This is a very significant departure from previous literary traditions. In the past, novels tended to focus on aristocracy, chivalry, as we have seen in novels like Water Margin or Mythological Beings. Example like The Journey to the West. Jinping Mei is different. It presents the complex, often morally ambiguous lives of commoners. And it's one of the earliest full-length novels across the world to explore the rich tapestry of ordinary people's experiences. My second point is that the setting and protagonist of Jinping Mei reflects the burgeoning influence of global commerce on literature. The protagonist, Xi Mengqin, is not only a merchant obsessed with money, but also lives very close to a river. As the scholar Nima has argued, these aspects of novel underscore the interconnection between economic forces and literary production, and shows how the rise of novel is intertwined with global trade and the expansion of a bourgeois mercantile class. My final point is that the novel's multiple translations and significant circulation within World Republic of Letters, let me quote Pascal Casanova's famous term, have enhanced appreciation of Jinping Mei's role in both Chinese and world literature. This global engagement is particularly fascinating to me. The widespread dissemination of Jinping Mei facilitates comparative studies of this novel and cements its position as a pioneering work of global fiction. Okay, let me sum up my points. First, Jin Pingmei's contribution to the evolution of global fiction lies in its pioneering portrayal of ordinary life. It also reflects the economic and cultural shifts. And finally, it plays a very active role in international literary exchange.
Well, from being seen as a Roman clay, a Buddhist morality play, pornography, what else, an exercise in naturalism to a novel of manners, Jin Pingmei has been received and interpreted through various lenses across different cultures, right? However, this reception has clearly evolved over time, influenced by shifts in cultural, academic, and literary perspectives. Interestingly, Professor C.T. Xia dismissed the work. C.T. Xia, also known as Xia Zhiqing, and for our listeners who don't have a background in East Asian literature, C.T. Xia is the one who brought Chinese literature to the U.S., also hailed as founding father of Chinese literature as an academic discipline, right? And the fact that Xia dismissed the Jin Pingmei speaks much to the academic canonization at the time, right? While on the contrary, we have David Roy praise the work's complexity, even comparing it to the works of Joyce and Nabokov. Could you please discuss the factors that may have contributed to the fluctuating reception of the work in both Eastern and Western contexts? How do these varied interpretations contribute to the novel's canonization as world literature? Or perhaps I should ask in this way, what does this suggest about the criteria for inclusion within the global literary canon?
Tackling the whole history of how Jin Pingmei had been received and interpreted is a pretty hefty task, and I might not be able to cover everything here.
I would like
to highlight that the perception of Jin Pingmei had been significantly shaped by the societal and cultural milieu of its critics, as well as their individual tastes and scholarly interests. You know, you talked about C.T. Xia, Xia Zhiqing, his training. I think at least his doctoral training is in Western realism.
Right.
He has found the novel lacking due to the perceived inconsistencies in character development. David Roy, he recognized the novel's realistic elements, but he appears to place a greater value on the wide-ranging depiction of Chinese society and culture than on character consistency or character being realistic. This is probably why he compares the novel to those of James Joyce. James Joyce, is famous for, those kind of stream of consciousness writing, such as Ulysses. So Joyce is the foremost modernist writer. So here I can see that, both Shah and Roy, they may have very different emphasis on certain aspects of the novel. And that's why they have a pretty significant, disagreements on the assessment of the novel's value. For those interested audience, I highly recommend Nai Fei Ding's book, Obscene Scenes, Sexual Politics in Jin Pingmei. It had an illuminating discussion of how Jin Pingmei have been received throughout the history.
Great.
As for your question about world literature, David Damrosch famously considered world literature as a mode of circulation. Jin Pingmei stands out as a particularly active participant in this global circulation, with frequent translations, retranslations, translations in different languages, and scholarly work across different linguistic and cultural traditions. But despite its dynamic presence in the global literary conversation, to the best of my knowledge, excerpts from Jin Pingmei has never been included in those major world literature anthologies, such as Norton, Bedford, and Longman. When I was a graduate student, I taught those world literature survey classes, and I used several different world literature anthologies. I did not see Jin Ping Mei. I read, Hong Lo Meng, The Story of Stone, Xi Yu Ji, The Journey to the West, but not Jin Ping Mei. This raises an intriguing possibility. Perhaps the novel's divergent evaluations fuel propels its widespread and very fast discussion and dissemination, but at the same time, acts as a barrier that prevents it from reaching the center of the global literary canon.
Right. Well, Jin Ping Mei exists in several editions, as you just mentioned, each reflecting different editorial choices, textual interpretations, and cultural, ideological contexts as such. These variations not only provide a rich field for comparative literary study, but also raise questions about the nature of textual authenticity and fidelity, right? And in your work, you mentioned given David Roy's preference for specific versions of Jin Ping Mei, what insights do you think we can glean from studying these different editions? How do Roy's preferences inform our understanding of the novel's themes, narrative structure, and cultural significance?
I think that's a very, very important question. I think the different editions or recensions of Jin Ping Mei has been, a very hot topic for discussion and debate in the academic world.
Right.
David Roy points out that there are three primary recensions or editions of Jin Ping Mei. He denotes them as A, B, and C recensions. The A recension, commonly known as the Cihua recension, is widely recognized as the earliest iteration of the novel and is notable for its extensive material. On the other hand, the B recension, or the Xiuxiang recension, omits some content from the A version, but introduces 200 illustrations along with new materials not found in the A edition. The C recension, also known as the Di Yi Qi Shu, which can be translated as the number one masterpiece edition, is based on the B version and features commentary from Zhang Zhupo, renowned literary critic of the Qin dynasty. Roy criticizes the B recension for its deletion and alternation of the quoted materials in the A version. But Tian Xiaofei advocates for the B version's literary and aesthetic merits. This kind of very different discourse points to a fascinating divergence in how the novel can be approached.
Right.
Is it a subject for scholarly study? Or is it a work of art for aesthetic appreciation? Or is it both? For me, the differing perspectives on these recensions reveal Jin Ping Mei's dynamic potential for very diverse interpretations and discussions. This dynamic potential actually is something that truly elevates the novel to greatness.
Right, so there shouldn't be a preference, but we should view all these different versions as different interpretations and rewriting of what's going on, right? I think that's absolutely fascinating. Well, the suggestion that the philosopher Xunzi's works, philosophical concepts, could be influential in Jin Ping Mei's framework, such as like Xunzi's distinct philosophical stance with new Confucianism alongside the novel's alignment with the Tai Cho school's iconoclastic interpretation of New Confucianism, etc. This perspective is further reinforced by the portrayal of the character Xi Menqing as the embodiment of a decadent ruler, a character possibly inspired by Xunzi's critiques of governance and moral decay. How does this hypothesis regarding the novel's authorship and philosophical underpinnings shape our reading of Jin Ping Mei, particularly in terms of understanding its commentary on leadership, morality, and social decay?
I just want to, add to your comments that, at least for me, the study of Jinping Mei should not just be confined to one single recension, but rather, Jinping Mei has multiple bodies, multiple recensions. And I think that's a very fascinating part of to study those traditional Chinese novels, Jinping Mei included. So to go back to your question about Xunzi, I think there's no question that Jinping Mei's author was influenced by various philosophical schools, including that of Xunzi's idea of the human nature and things like that. But I want to point out that Jinping Mei is, after all, a novel, and it's a big novel. So the novel's for us, an intricate world, opens up multitudes of interpretive avenues. That, of course, right. I think should be and must be one of them. But I want to say that I think the significance of Xunzi for me is that linking Xunzi's ideas to Jinping Mei underlines that novel transcends its reputation and merely as an erotic work. So as you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, that it's a controversial, I think mainly because of those kind of erotic descriptions in the novel. So I think, when we try to say, hey, this Xunzi, showing that kind of, human nature, that people are, greedy, are obsessed with wealth and everything, basically just takes away, the reader's attention from focusing mainly on those erotic descriptions. Instead, this Xunzi idea really helps readers delve deeply into the complexity of human experiences that his novel truly excels in describing.
What kind of complexity that you're referring to?
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that this novel often portrays, I think a lot of scholars have already said that for many characters, when you try to use a certain stereotype that, hey, I'm a bad guy, always greedy, always do bad things, or a bad character.
Right.
Often the novel challenges you to see a different side of that character. Xi Wenxin, he is greedy, he is obsessed with money, women, and sometimes does a lot of bad things. But I think readers sometimes can be touched by how much love he indeed has for Li Pingar, one of his concubines, especially when Li Pingar was about to die, or even after her death. So these are very intricate descriptions of the characters, and these are I think very important aspects of the novel that defies just one simple or one straightforward interpretation through a particular lens. Rather, it just needs us to use our whole empathy to understand, that these people have, very different faces of characteristics that one school of philosophy may not fully explain.
Exactly. Well, regarding the history of translation, which major versions have been the most influential in the literary market? What is your perspective on comparing these dominant versions?
Jinping Mei has been translated into many languages, including German, Japanese, and French. My familiarity, primarily lies in the English translations. In this realm, Clement Attlee's The Golden Lotus, published in 1939, and David Roy's The Plum in the Golden Vase, released in a series from 1993 to 2013, are particularly influential. For scholarly work, I lean towards Roy's translation for its
We hope you have enjoyed listening to this episode on Jinping Mei so far. In the second half of this episode, Professor Luo is going to discuss how different translation strategies influence the English-speaking reader's engagement with the novel and how they reflect the cultural and ideological shifts throughout the 20th century. If you want to complete the entire episode, we encourage you to subscribe at theglobalnovel.com/subscribe. Thank you so much for listening.